Welcome to the I Spy with My MyoEye podcast. I am your host, Brittany Murphy. I am a certified oral facial myologist, registered dental hygienist, and lifelong learner. My goal with this podcast is to bring you up to date in current literature and expand your knowledge of oral facial myofunctional disorders so that together we can get to the root cause of the problem. You ask, we'll answer by collaborating with true pioneers and specialties associated with the myo world. Join me on this journey as we dive into the life-altering world of tethered oral tissues and airway space. Let's do this thing. Quick disclaimer, all content expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the speakers and is for informational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Because every person is so unique, you should always consult with your specialized healthcare professional. Anne-Marie DeMarco is a pediatric occupational therapist. She currently owns a private practice where she provides in-home pediatric occupational therapy services to young adults, children, toddlers, and infants in Connecticut. Anne-Marie takes a holistic approach to treatment. During each session, she is constantly evaluating overall development, sensory processing, and the child's environment in order to help her clients and their families achieve their goals. She is passionate about educating caregivers and parents with regard to their child's retained reflexes and sensory processing needs while improving overall gross and fine motor development. Anne-Marie's goal as an occupational therapist is to ultimately improve a child's independence with their activities of daily living, such as play, sleep, mealtime, bath time, family outings, and dressing. Anne-Marie has expanded her professional development knowledge in primitive reflex integration, sensory processing, and oral restrictions. She also focuses on educating families and screening for airway disorders and educating families about the importance of sleep hygiene. Anne-Marie graduated from Bay Path University with a Master of Occupational Therapy degree in 2015. She obtained a bachelor's degree in psychology at Southern Connecticut State University in 2009. Her passion for occupational therapy began in 2010 when she began working in the birth to three setting. Good morning, Anne-Marie. Thank you for taking the time to come on here and chat with me this Friday morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Brittany.
Absolutely. I am so excited to have you on here because you are like a favorite of mine. You have already taught me so much. So I'm excited for the listeners to all learn from you. I was totally amazed. When we had our first meeting and we talked about retained primitive reflexes and really the crossover between the patients that I see as a myofunctional therapist and you as an occupational therapist. So I'm really excited because I think that this is sometimes what gets us stuck as myofunctional therapists, where we're not really able to progress as we want to. So we really need to look at the big picture and be able to work with that team and know who and when, you know, to refer. So I'm super excited. So if you want to start by sharing a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to specialize in primitive reflex integration.
Sure. So I started out working in births of three. This was probably in like 2009, 2010. So for those that don't know, it's the early intervention setting. So it's ages 0 through 3 years. And I wasn't yet an OT. I got the opportunity to shadow some amazing OTs and co-treat with them. And I just knew immediately I was supposed to become an OT. So I gained a lot of experience in that setting and went back to school, took my prereqs and became an occupational therapist in 2015, I think. So after I became an OT, I had the opportunity to work at a sensory integration clinic. And there I saw these OTs doing this different kinds of testing. And I was like, what is this? So again, like observed, shadowed, asked a ton of questions and come to find out they were testing primitive reflexes. I had absolutely no idea about retained reflexes. I had never heard about them. I knew tons and tons about sensory processing, but retained reflexes really never came up, even in graduate school. And even when I was working in births of three, prior to becoming an occupational therapist. So I started to learn and research and just take course after course with regard to retained reflexes, how to treat them, how to evaluate for them. And I took this one course. It's the MNRI course. It's by Dr. Moskitova, and she explains it as the missing link. And there's no better way to really explain it. Like, that's what it is. You know, we see these kids that, you know, have difficulty in their everyday lives with, you know, coordination and simple tasks. And as soon as I started to really understand about the retained reflexes and then their relation to the ADLs, so play, sleep, eating, you know, feeding, all of that stuff, I just kind of ran with it. Mm-hmm. And retained reflexes really are the reason that I started my own company, because I did feel like this was so important. And I think now it's gaining some popularity, but a lot of therapists, I mean, I know you mentioned, you know, myofunctional therapists, but even OT, PT, a lot of people still don't know much about this. So really, I feel like back in, I think it was about 2016 when I started to just learn and research, and I kind of thought like, this is definitely what I'm supposed to be focusing on with these kiddos.
Absolutely. Now here you are. So some of the listeners might not really know exactly what primitive reflex integration is or what retained primitive reflexes are. So if you want to just explain a little bit on that first.
Yeah. So primitive reflexes are basically, they develop in utero. So they start in utero and they're really present for survival, to facilitate development and to help with the birthing process. So for instance, like, you know, take for example, there's a reflex called the spinal gallant reflex. And during the birthing process, what happens is when the baby is kind of making their way down the birthing canal and there is pressure, there has to be a stimulus too. Let me back up a little bit. There has to be a stimulus with the reflex. So for the spinal gallant, if there is a stimulus on the child's back, so say like on like the shoulder blade area, the scapula downward, the infant will actually flex their body towards the stimulus. And then if it happens on the left side, then they flex their body towards. So they're kind of working their way. It's helping with that birthing process. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are a whole bunch of different reflexes that serve different purposes. So what happens with these retained, you know, these retained reflexes is basically that if a child still has their spinal gallant reflex and they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, which is, it should be integrated by a certain time. So if they're, you know, if they have this reflex and they're experiencing bedwetting, you know, it's probably because this reflex never integrated. You know, I don't like to use the word, like, we don't want to say like they go away, because they don't. We just, if it's still not integrated by the time they're 4, 5, 6 years old, you can see issues like with bedwetting, focus. So this reflex is very closely associated with ADHD and ADD-like tendencies. So fidgeting all the time. So if a stimulus, something touches their back, they're going to feel like they are almost crawling out of their skin. So there's a sensory component to this as well. So these retained reflexes, we really want to see them, or reflexes in general, primitive reflexes, we want to see them start to integrate by like 6 to 12 months. You know, I've heard different, some people are like, nope, it's 18 months. And some people say, nope, by 6 months, like definitely. Mm-hmm. You know, in my opinion, I think it's that range between 6 to 12 months. Mm-hmm. Because we need to have a little bit more kind of like control. If these reflexes are retained, really they're dictating our movement patterns, our response to a stimuli. And, you know, we have even like, you know, I talk about a lot, like the Moro or the fear paralysis, like that's a fight, flight, freeze cycle. And those are reflexes. So if those aren't integrated, you have these kiddos that, you know, have a lot of trouble regulating that social emotional component. You know, a lot of like impulsivity, a lot of difficulty just attending, you know, they might have trouble just interacting with a peer. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, a lot of these issues really do, like I've been saying this for a long time now. I think 100% of the kiddos on my caseload have at least one retained reflex.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what are, like, what would you say, and I don't even know if this is something you can answer, but are there more common retained retained reflexes? And if you can answer that, like, what are, as you say, what they are, like, what are different symptoms that you might see present in that child?
Yeah. So, I've just been getting so many referrals for, like I was saying, the social emotional piece. And that one, as soon as I hear, you know, a family talk to me and they're saying, you know, their impulse control is terrible. They're hitting, you know, they're eloping, they're running out of the room. They're bolting from me in a parking lot. You know, at school, they might be covering their ears a lot, you know, those, again, like it's this fight, flight, freeze cycle these kiddos are stuck in. So, you know, if like a 5-year-old is stuck in this fight, flight, freeze, and they have a Mora or they have a fear paralysis reflex, in that moment when a ball is tossed to them or a peer, maybe a peer pushes them or accidentally bumps into them or the fire alarm goes off. Mm-hmm. In that moment for that child, it is survival. Like it is like a lion coming at them. Like it is not, they can't modulate that. Like they can't say, okay, the fire alarm is going off, I'm safe, I just have to get out of this room. Or a peer bumped into me, my body is safe, it was an accident. Like there is no rationalizing. Like it's in the primitive brain, like that's where it's stored, and it cannot get to this like frontal lobe, that executive function piece, to understand, okay, I'm safe, you know. So I don't know what the percentage is, but many of my kiddos have these, the Mora. Usually it's both of them. Very rarely do I see one of them versus the other. Mm-hmm. But you know, you might see a child who just, you know, they're like that behavioral kid, like they're always hitting, or they're always kind of getting up and moving around, or they're anxious, they're fidgeting. They might cry a lot, or, you know, even just, I mean, yelling at a peer, like social, almost like inappropriate social behaviors. Right, like I don't want to use that word inappropriate, but they just are, their body also is being pumped with this like cortisol and adrenaline all of the time. So they're just like, constantly in this cycle of fight, flight, freeze, and they can't rationalize, you know. It's like, and then, you know, I was working with a child yesterday, and I was integrating the fear paralysis, and usually, or working on integrating the fear paralysis, and usually what you'll see is that's the freeze response. So we need that, right? Like if we are in danger, if, you know, something is happening and we need to kind of freeze for a second, it's a protective response. Mm-hmm. And I'll let the kids, whatever, like if they want to hold a fidget, if they want to blow bubbles, if whatever they want to do to make them more comfortable, mm-hmm. because, you know, this is a separate topic, I guess, but they need resources to help them get through. And by that, I mean, just strategies to sort of help.
Right.
And I told him like, all right, like, let's take a deep breath. And he froze on me.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, and this is a child I suspect has like an airway disorder, right? But me, I'm thinking, and I was just talking to a colleague about this. I was like, we're telling these kids to like take a deep breath, but like, what if they can't? Like, what if they cannot take a deep breath? Like, what if they can't motor plan nasal breathing, which I see all the time? Like, and right, this is when I reached out to you because I was so grateful to connect with you because so many of these kiddos just can't breathe. Like they cannot breathe. And part of it, yeah, is like this reflex, but part of it is, you know, do they have the enlarged adenoids? Like, do they have the open mouth posture and motor planning that nasal breathing? It just doesn't come naturally to them, you know? So I was like laughing at myself because I told this poor kid last night, take a deep breath. And he looked at me like, you would have thought I asked him, you know, to like, I don't even know, like climb the fence. Like, and I'm thinking like, I know better, you know, but like, I think as adults, like, we take deep breaths, you know, when we're stressed, like we're mindful of this and it's still hard. Like I still catch myself in a stressful situation, holding my breath sometimes. Right. And I'm like, you know, so you see a lot of this, like the social emotional impact of yep. those, you know, of the Moro, the fear paralysis. I mean, the low tone, that TLR, it's the tonic labyrinthine reflex. So the open mouth posture again, right? Like it's all connected. Mm-hmm. The open mouth posture, like the W sitting, you see these kiddos in low tone and yeah, like maybe it's just low tone, but maybe they have a retained reflex that's causing this open mouth posture, right? Like then it's like, okay, this is like a reflexive response. ATNR, the asymmetrical tonic neck reflex. I just posted about this and probably got like 30 messages on Instagram because I wrote something like, if your child had torticollis as an infant, they should be tested for an ATNR. Mm-hmm. It's there. I, you know, ask about torticollis on my intake forms, but then like that oral restriction piece too, that's missed with torticollis. So mm-hmm. that reflex is, man, it is like, for lack of a better word, like pesky, like it is so difficult to integrate. It is
really
global. Yeah. And I think because, you know, and I was guilty of this too. Like when I first became an OT, you're told, okay, stretch the neck. It's torticollis, just do stretches. Right. And like, it'll all be fine. Like we were never taught look in the mouth. Like we were never taught any of that. And it wasn't until recently, again, like I started getting into this, you know, your Mayo world, like with bits and pieces and looking into, and I have a friend, a colleague that is a speech therapist, and he kind of specializes in the oral restriction. So mm-hmm. all these pieces started coming together and I realized like, oh my gosh, all these kids that have a retained ATNR majority have torticollis and oh my gosh, the majority of those kids have oral restrictions, like just like this connection, you know, and that ATNR reflex, it's global and it has to do with helping like the sensory systems to mature. So there's so much confusion in the sensory systems mm-hmm. when ATNR is still present. And the ATNR reflex is when the infant is lying down on their back. So they're in a supine position and it's controlled by a head movement. So they turn their head, say to the right, and their right arm extends. So it's called the fencing reflex. Their right arm extends, their left arm bends, their right leg extends, their left leg bends. So imagine a six-year-old having a retained ATNR and they're like, here you go. Like, here's your worksheet to do at school. And every time they move their head, their body responds to what they're doing.
Wow. Yeah.
It's not possible for, and again, like if you don't know about retained reflexes, you're like, I'm going to put a pencil grip on this pencil to help this child write better, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like I'm not doing that, but if you're not working on the root cause of that ATNR and you're not integrating that, and yes, adaptive equipment, obviously that's what OTs do. Like you can use like a slant board and a pencil grip and all of that good stuff. But then you look at the social implications, these kids can't really throw or catch a ball, you know, like, again, like anything that takes that coordination, they struggle with like riding a bike, pumping on a swing. Like what kid doesn't want to be able to do that, you know? Right. So, and usually not always, but most of the time, like they're very aware that they have these deficits and they don't understand why they are present, you know,
right. I'm sure they get frustrated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, another big one I see, I feel like is, you know, spinal pares and the spinal gallant. And that's usually, as I was talking about before, when the infant's coming down the birthing canal and there's that stimulus, C-section babies. So you have, there's like such an increase in C-sections mm-hmm. and they don't have an opportunity for these reflexes to be, you know, to like be elicited, like for the very first time, like there's just not that opportunity. So it doesn't happen. And if there isn't that stimulus to start that process, if it's never emerged, then there's no integration because you have to work on. So I always say, like, anytime I'm working with a baby that was, you know, born C-section, I do still work in early intervention, like a couple hours a month. I work on like this reflex, you know, because I know that it's there. I mean, I test it, but usually it's
now,
there.
I have a question because I know from talking with you, and it's going to be one of our questions coming up. So listeners, don't worry. We are going to get into, you know, how does Anne-Marie integrate these reflexes with that 4, 5, 6 above age population? But like now I was just thinking, you saying that you work with the birth to 3 population, how do you integrate reflexes into like a 6 to 12 month old if it hasn't been integrated? Like what, like they can't cognitively understand different tasks or exercises for them to do.
Yeah. Free, like movement, like no containers. Okay. No containers, right? Like if they're, but this is where it gets tricky. I feel like a lot of my little ones too, right? That have reflux as well. It's like, they don't want to be on their stomach. Who wants to be on their stomach if you have reflux? I don't, right. You know, like you're elevated. Like if you have reflux, like if you go out and you eat like a meal that has pasta and sauce and, you know, fried whatever, and you want to lay on your stomach? Like, no, probably not. Yep. And engage those muscles. Absolutely not. You know, and a lot of infants that I work with have reflux. So, you know, we've had to do, you know, I always promote like tummy time, like free movement. We really want them to be able to just move through these natural sort of like patterns, right? So like the sitting up and the rolling, kind of engaging them in that, right? So like, if I do have an infant, say, or, you know, and again, like those reflexes, they might still be there when they are at that 6 to 12 month range. It doesn't mean that I can't like facilitate a little bit, right? So right. Like, if I want them to work on like, you know, go into that ATNR pattern, like you put something here, they reach, they turn, like, great. And then we can, you know, there's other strategies that we can use, mm-hmm. but a lot of like natural integration starts just by letting them move. And a lot of our babies are in bouncers and saucers and jumpers and car seats. And, you know, there's that moderation piece. Absolutely. Like for sanity. Absolutely. But it's just that they are so restricted. And the same thing with torticollis, they are restricted in their movement, their natural movement patterns. So when they can't move through a reflexive pattern naturally, we can't integrate it. Like it right. doesn't naturally integrate, you know?
Now, are there, container like things that you do recommend over the other?
I feel like, you know, what I do usually recommend is like, they have almost like the little like play pens, like the gates that you can set up. So they're a little mm-hmm. bit more contained, but they can move on the floor. Yep. You know, baby wearing is usually recommended. And they can, like, I don't, there's also something, it's called the up seat, and that's better. Like the Bumbo is just, yeah, that not good. It's not good. The way that it puts their hips get into that. That's another podcast. Don't get them off. The up seat is much better with the positioning of their hips and their posture. But again, like we have to kind of wait for them to be able to like independently right. sit, you know, but the issue is like with these devices, we're having these babies bear weight through their legs, like in like a jumper, say, when like, they're not supposed to be doing that yet, you know, like right. we're not supposed to be doing that with their legs yet. And all of these items out on the market, like it's, they're there. And I think that they're just very common and everybody has them. And yeah, like if you need a, you know, a swing for an infant for some, you know, a break or just, you know, to give yourself a minute, sure. Like fine. Right. But I'm talking about like extensive container use. Like that's, we do not want to see that. Right. So, and I think, yeah, that's important too. Like understanding that, like, I hate to say the word milestones, but understanding the milestones in which like, yeah, they should be maybe sitting up on their own by now. Okay, now we can have them in this up seat. You know, now this is a little bit of a better option than the saucer where their feet, like they're, I mean, sometimes their feet don't even touch the ground and they're right. on their toes. We don't want that. Like right. we don't want them on their toes, you know? I think it was like a couple of years, I might have been 2 years ago or last year. I can't even remember. Maybe last year. Where the CDC removed crawling as a milestone.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I think it was, right? Yeah. Yeah. 2020, it was 2021.
Was it? Yeah. Yes. So. Yes. Yes. And I think like everyone let out, like any specialist that understands child development, like let out like this collective scream, because we were like, what do you mean? Like crawling is one of the most important sequences that a child goes through, you know? So we, again, like that free movement. I mean, that's one of the first questions that I ask if I'm evaluating like a 4-year-old or a 10-year-old or like a 16-year-old, I ask, did they crawl? You know, like it integrates reflexes, right and left side of the brain, visual, spatial. It does all of these amazing things. And we want to see them move through. There's a purpose for each of those, you know, like we want to see them rolling and sitting up and then bearing weight and then rocking and then crawling and then, you know, starting to kind of pull the stand. Like that's something else we don't want. Like I hear a lot, like, oh my gosh, like, you know, he's 7 months old and he's already standing. And I'm like, oh no, like, did he crawl? You know, is he crawling?
Kind of just bypassed that.
Yeah. Like if that fluid motion of crawling is that coordination is so much more difficult than just locking your joints out and standing up, you know? So like, yay, it is okay, great. But like, let's kind of go back a little bit and let's facilitate that crawling, because each sequence has a purpose behind it, you know, especially crawling. So, you know, talking about, and that's kind of what that's why I love this idea of like that like playpen, like a gated area, because yeah, they can freely move, and kind of, you know, naturally come into those different sequences.
And what is the earliest age you would start using that? Like that playpen type of thing?
I think when they really start like rolling, probably, you know, if you're doing kind of like a tummy time, you know, I mean, you can do tummy time on the floor, on your chest, over a therapy ball, you know, whatever. Yeah. But once they kind of really start moving and we're kind of taking that like safety into account, I would say, you know, some babies can roll, like they would go from like, you know, one side of the room to the other, you know, so just to keep them contained, for lack of a better word.
I'm already thinking in my head, like when, you know, we are finally blessed with a family, the amount of text messages I'm going to be sending you, and I'm probably going to have you come to my house and be like, is all this stuff okay, Anne Marie? Is this okay? Oh, can I start using this? When can I start using that? Because, you know, to your point, like there's so much stuff out there that is advertised as something that is helpful for your child. Mm-hmm. And moms don't know the difference, because if they're not in the specialty or know somebody in the specialty or working with somebody in the specialty, how are they supposed to know it? I don't even know. Would this stuff be easily Googled? I would assume that like all the makers of whatever all these containers are probably what's going to come up first anytime they Google this stuff. So unless you're doing this like deep dive research or even think about, develop like how it's helping with development and whatnot. I mean, I don't even know how moms would come across this information. Yeah. Any recommendations? I mean, obviously like social media is great and moms are always looking on social media. So hopefully they come across pages like your own, but man, I just wish this information was out there more readily. Like I say the same thing about even when we talk about the mechanisms of the difference between breastfeeding and bottle feeding, not that we're ever going to judge a mom for the way that they choose to feed their baby. But I think that every mom should understand the impact outside of just the nutritional benefit of breastfeeding and truly understand and be geared with all of that knowledge to then be able to make whatever the best decision is for their family.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, what I was saying before too, like, I'm so happy that we connected. I think it was over the fall, because I feel like collaborating with other specialists fortunately and unfortunately, right? Like there's so much information on social media. Mm-hmm. But I think that is where a lot of people are getting their information, you know, unless you know, like I worked in Birth to Three strictly for like, I don't even know, 7 years, maybe. No one knew what I did. Like friends would ask me, family would ask me, and I was like, well, yep. Like I'm a Birth to Three. I think at the time it was called like an early intervention associate. Like they've changed the name since, but no one had any idea. Like what they were like, what is this program? Like, what is it all about? And still to this day, like if people call me privately and they have a child under the age of 3, I tell them to do that first and then come back to me. Because you get a team of people, you know, if your child is eligible, which is another podcast.
Right.
right? Like you get a PT, speech, BCBA, social work, like depending on the diagnosis, OT. But honestly, I always feel as though like if your child is on the cusp of being eligible or for birth to three, like if they're just eligible and you're not sure, take it, like take right. it and run with it because it is such a wealth of information. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like, right, if you Google, you know, whatever baby registry gifts or items, or what do I need to add? I could make like a post on this. I should right? Like, I bet you, right, every single item that comes up is going to be from these major companies that have tons of money for advertising, and you're going to see a right. saucer, and you're going to see the Bumbo, and you're going to, right, like that's what you're going to see. And right, how would you know any differently if you, you know, that's where we do our research, right? Like we hop on Google and we type it in. So yeah, I mean, I wish that I had a better answer, but I do feel like there are some wonderful accounts on social media that are very, very helpful, you know, with regard to, like that in the infant stage and like development and what to do and what not to do.
What I'll do is if you don't mind, if you want to later on, send me a list of those accounts and then I can put them in the show notes just so that everybody has those. Now we're talking a lot about kids, obviously. What can adults have retained primitive reflexes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So can I tell your story? So for those listening, I went to visit Brittany, earlier in the year, and we were talking about retained. I don't even know how this happened, but you asked me to like look at your right. So there's this one reflex that's very closely associated with like oral motor. It's the Palmer. The professional name is like the Bapkin Palmamental, but anyway, we'll say Palmer for this one. So, right, like I looked at Brittany's hand, we did the test, and there was a response, right? So I, you know, had asked Brittany, like, do you drink out of a straw, right? And I'm going to leave, and right, you were like biting your lip, right? And there's but you've learned, right, to regulate and give yourself the input that you need. So this, so adults, I mean, ADD, ADHD, anxiety, depression, fears, phobias. Am I saying that like every single person that has like a diagnosis or that struggles in some way, shape, or form has it? Absolutely not. But yeah, I mean, adults can have these retained reflexes and they can even like come back from like a traumatic like brain injury or a stroke, trauma, you know? So they can be present. And I mean, they can be present for your entire life, you know, and you can just not, I think what becomes our normal, like even if you think about like trauma, right? Like if you are surviving, you have like a fight, flight, freeze type response, whether you know it or not. Like if we are surviving, that's what's happening. So, you know, it's interesting because I see, you know, I was talking to someone the other day and, they were saying about how, like, when they were younger, if they would lose at a game, they would like, you know, run away. Like, I am not doing this, like this competition. And I said, like, that's a flight response, right? Like, I can't handle this. This is way too overwhelming and overstimulating for me. I got to get out of here. You know, that's a classic flight response. We see that in a lot of our kids too, that can't handle that like competition or an intense moment maybe. But absolutely. So, and with the adults, you know, the protocol is really the same. I don't want to say it's easier to integrate. It really just depends, you know, also cognitively where the adult is, where the child is.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, absolutely. Adults can have retained reflexes.
Now, as far as the exercises that you give to, so obviously you're going in for whatever, once a week, working with the patients for 45 minutes or so. And then I'm assuming there's exercises that the families can work on together in the time that they don't see you. Are they easy to integrate into their daily lives? Do they need a lot of props? Like, how does that part work?
So there's different ways. So there's exercises and there's activities that you can do to integrate reflexes. It depends on, so for instance, the fear paralysis reflex that we were talking about, that exercise to integrate is only done twice a week. Like, and those wow. reflexes are interesting because we need them. We need mm-hmm. a fight response. We need a flight response. We need a freeze response for survival. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to integrate them past the point where we don't have them anymore. Like, we still right. need those reflexes. I will say a lot of kids, and because they're, you know, they're young, these kiddos that I work with, mm-hmm. they will tell me, usually the phrase that I get is like, it hurts. Like if I'm integrating an ATNR, and I think, and I'll ask them, like some of them can like really tell me like what it feels like. I had one, actually she was a teenager that I was working with like a long time ago. And she said, like, I know in my brain what I want my body to do, but like my body just like doesn't listen to me. Mm-hmm. And that was like one of the best descriptions I ever received about retained reflexes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like there are exercises. So, and I've taken like multiple courses, which I do recommend doing that because you get different perspectives. You know, there's even one, you know, one specific chiropractor, Dr. Robert Malello, who wrote a book called Disconnected Kids, and he incorporates like brain balancing and like nutrition. So like, I try to pull from all these different areas because some kids, like if you try one exercise and they hate it, I'm not going to come to your house every week and make them do something that they absolutely hate. You know, like we're going to problem solve until I can kind of meet them. I don't want to say meet them halfway, 'cause like, it's hard work for them. And I try to make everything as play-based as I possibly can. But with the retained reflexes, like sometimes we just have to do it, you know, sometimes right. we just have to get through it. So I took an MNRI course, a while ago called, it was called the neurotactile integration, like protocol. Mm-hmm. So for my kiddos that I try to integrate, or rather, let me back up. If I know that this child is already incredibly anxious, that mm-hmm. a stimuli or stimulus is going to send them into a fight, flight, freeze response, I am not going to start by doing the exercise that is probably going to send them into this fight, flight, freeze. Like I will not do that. So right. there are other ways in this, you know, activities to try. So sometimes we'll start with like one activity. But I feel like the neurotactile protocol has a lot to do with the tactile system. And what it does is basically the child just has to be able to lie there. So sometimes we have to just work up to them being able to be still for like
right.
a minute or 2 minutes. Like, right.
But I would do that, be asked to just lay still for a minute.
I know. Right. to start, basically what you're doing is you are kind of like calming these brainstem like defensive mechanisms by like telling them like they're safe, you know, like right. it's very like purposeful, like deep touch, like tactile, deep touch. There's like some traction in there, but like, it's basically a very, like you can play calming music. Like you can, you know, this is where I have kids like hold a fidget toy, or you can like take a deep breath. You know, whatever might, if they can take a deep breath, you know, wherever they might be, it's kind of like this protocol. I mean, I use it with, even if, well, all my kids do have retained reflexes right now, you can pick and choose and use bits and pieces, but a lot of my kiddos have to start here. So like, I wouldn't say it helps with like relaxing those like defensive reflexes. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like setting up a foundation to let right. them to start to like tell them like you're safe and like it's okay. And even if they're feeling certain like sensations in their body, like I had a kiddo, I think it was 2 weeks ago. We did some of like the fear paralysis, and like there's like these little animal exercises that you can do, and we've kind of worked our way up and he can do them now, but he now knows what he needs afterwards. So like he'll feel all this and he's like, ah, he was like, mom, like come lay on top of me. Like he needed that proprioceptive input. He needed like yep. a weighted blanket, his Z vibe, yep. gun, a swing, something warm. Like, so this yep. is what I mean by like those strategies. Like he needs right. something after that integration piece is starting because I mean, he's in survival mode. You know, if we were all in survival mode, like we would need that too.
Now, what about like, so there's an exercise that I learned to do in one of my myo courses where they cross the midline. So like right arm to left knee, we kind of just do like a little warm up sometimes before we do our exercises. And so often you'll see kids struggle with that, where they can't, they want to do the same side. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, so like similar to, jumping jacks, right? Like if you walked into like a PE class, fourth, fifth grade, how many kids can do a jumping jack? You know, that's a huge, you know, obviously, yes, there's a learning curve with jumping jacks. I understand. But right, like when you aren't able to cross midline, so that ATNR, right? Like you turn your head and you're here, crossing midline or difficulty crossing midline is a huge red flag for an ATNR reflex. So, right, like there is so much coordination that has to happen. So like there's also like this motor plan and like this praxis, right? Ideation of, this is what I have planned in my brain. Like I see Brittany doing these, like, you know, this, I'm blanking out on the type of movement pattern it is. It'll come to me. You know, I see Brittany bringing her elbow to her opposite knee. Like I need to do that. And then, right, then you see them and they're bringing the elbow, right elbow to their right knee, as opposed to the right elbow to the left knee, because that's a little bit easier. So the ATNR and even like the that STNR reflex sometimes, right? Like the upper and lower body, that's a, one that integrates with like crawling, and there's head control and there's so much happening. But usually when you see a child struggling with something like that, and like, they don't pick it up, you know, by the second time you see them, if they're not really getting that, right, that right and left side of the brain, like there's some disconnection, like there's some confusion with how they are supposed to mirror your movements. And if there's coordination difficulties with something like that, again, like I'm repeating myself, but like, how are they going to ride a bike? You know, like, oh my gosh, like that's impossible. Like that's it's just not possible for them. Or like go to the playground and safely navigate playground equipment without getting injured, you know? So, right, when you're incorporating, I mean, that's, and by the way, that's like one of the best movement patterns that you can do to help that right and left side of the brain, like warm up and all of that. But right, a lot of kids struggle with that movement a lot.
And just the balance too. Like I find a lot of them will need to grab the chair in front of them.
Right. So then there's that, like, again, coming back to like the low tone, that tonic labyrinthine reflex, where like, if there is a change in their head position, they can lose their balance. So that one is especially important too. I just mentioned like the playground equipment. When you have a child, say they're like up on a higher platform on the playground and like an airplane fly, like what 4-year-old doesn't want to look up and see an airplane, and they change their head position to see the airplane and they lose their balance and they're down. You know, like that's a reflex. Like they should be able to look up and maintain their balance.
Right.
And if these kiddos have that TLR, they can't do that. So similar, right, with the balance, that book, Disconnected Kids, that I brought up prior, talks a lot about balance and how the retained reflexes and balancing the right and left side of the brain has to do with, it's one of the balancing on one leg is one of the tests that they do in the Disconnected.
Okay. Now I got you. Okay. My last question is, what are three, and I don't know if easy is the right word, but easy things or any three things that families can do, you know, at home to help facilitate better movement for their children?
So going outside, just the ability to navigate, you know, walking from the grass, maybe up onto the curb and like balancing along a curb or climbing a tree, you know, getting on a swing set, getting that vestibular input, which again, a lot of my kiddos, sometimes they seek way too much of, and sometimes they don't seek enough of it. So, you know, spending time outside is one of the absolute best ways to help with that, like natural integration process. Swimming, I will say, I have had so many kiddos, and this, you know, also has to do with breathing as well, I think, you know, but a lot of my kiddos that are, especially over the summer when they were in the pool a lot, their integration process like sped up when they were in the pool. Their breathing was better. We would practice like with the breath ball, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh, like you're doing this. And a lot of it, I had the only major change was swim. So especially for kids that they might be, and yes, it can be loud if you're getting swim lessons, like in a, you know, facility and like there's the echo and the auditory stimulus and there's other kids, like I get that. But usually swim is one of the best activities for a child that has retained reflexes because you're moving your body in this natural way. You're getting feedback or input from the water.
Right.
And they're able to practice their breath control once they're, you know, old enough and they're putting their face in the water, like they're blowing bubbles in the water, they're breathing through their nose. You know, I don't know. It's like we talked about before, this fight, flight, freeze. So many of my kiddos, like I actually did the math. I wanted to tell you this, before we got on, I have 60% of my kids have some type of airway disorder. Definitely 20%. I suspect that they do. Mm-hmm. But they haven't moved forward with myo or ENT. Mm-hmm. So 80% of my kids that I'm seeing right now.
There is such a crossover. It is, you know, just so mind-boggling. And now that you've given, you know, myself and you got to meet Amy, one of our other therapists, some little tips and tricks of things for us to look out for, you know, we're knowing so much more now when we need to make that referral. And again, it's tough. Sometimes families don't want to follow through and we get it. Like financial barriers are a real thing and having to see and do all the things is just not feasible for some families, but it makes us such better therapists to be able to understand each other's, you know, backgrounds enough to know when to make that referral, because it's really when you have a team that understands the importance of collaborative care that you truly can transform these children's lives, children, adults, whoever your patient is. So again, I'm so happy and so blessed to have met you. You're just a wonderful soul anyways, aside from being an absolutely fantastic practitioner. So thank you for everything that you do. Thank you for teaching me and everybody at CT Oral Facial Myology. We appreciate you and everything you do. Would you like to tell, the listeners where they can find you on social media? Because your social media page is like the bomb diggity.
Oh my gosh. You're just the best. Thanks. So, my Instagram handle is my first name. It's Anne Marie, ANNMARIE_OT. And through that, like you can use the link that's in my bio, you can connect to my website, you can email me through the website. If you have questions, I provide like free consultations. I'm also very, I'm very honest about like, if you call me and I feel like I'm not a good fit for you, I will refer you out to someone. If you call me and you're like, I have a question about my 2-year-old, I will help you figure out and navigate the birth to three system. If we can, you know, I really want to make sure that whoever contacts me, like their child or infant, toddler, whatever, is getting the best support possible, you know? So, if anybody has questions, they can just reach out through my, my Instagram handle. My website has, I have a blog post about, you know, primitive reflexes, about like developmentally appropriate toys, you know, for, I think I did like infant through like 5 or 6 year old. So there's some like ideas on there, but that's where they can find me.
Yay. And it's so important, so much so that we even put Anne Marie on our website, a little tab for more resources, just so that parents, again, they can look into it. They can read more about it, have a conversation with Anne Marie, have an evaluation with herself or one of her other therapists, because it truly makes such a profound impact. So thank you for spending time with me. And I'm sure everybody's going to absolutely love this episode. So we're going to have a part two.
Oh my gosh, anytime. Just let me know. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of I Spy with My Maya Y. If you want to hear more about these episodes, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or feel free to contact me at hello@myctom.com.
Don't forget to subscribe as well and let us know of any subject or guest speaker you'd like to hear from. Help spread the word by sharing today's episode on your social media page. You can find me on Facebook at CT Oral Facial Myology or Instagram handle CT_OralFacial_Myology. Everybody have a wonderful day.